Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Before we turn to your essential political analysis for this week, I want to tell you about our wonderful partners at The Resident, where all rooms are designed to combine pure comfort with quintessential British style and design. Whether you're escaping to London for a romantic break, or visiting the city with friends and family, there's no better place to stay in the heart of the neighbourhood. Without The Resident, you might not get to experience London. And without The Resident, we wouldn't be here on Whitehall Sources. Whitehall Sources, your essential politics podcast, is brought to you in association with The Resident. Hello and welcome to Whitehall Sources. We're recording on Wednesday the 1st of May. That's right, it's the day before the local elections and we'll be talking lots about them. I'm Callum McDonald, welcome to the podcast. Also here is Lala Moonchild. Hello Lala.
Right, okay, good morning. I know to what you refer and I had a heart-stopping moment last night when the notification popped up on my phone that the first flight with one entire person on it had gone from Britain to Rwanda, sending someone off who was illegal to Rwanda. And long-term listeners, indeed, in fact, listeners from last week will recall that I have mocked Rishi Sunak's policy of a third country deportation for illegal immigrants as unworkable and costly. And if it ever happened, so convinced was I that it would never happen that I would change my name to Lala Minchel and go and live in Yip.
And how's the yurt? Have you bought one yet?
Do you know what? For one, I discovered last night when I was about to kind of own up and eat humble pie, which I'm not going to for reasons I will say in a minute. Yurts are really expensive. I mean, insanely expensive. I don't, you know, the idea that this is some kind of hippie live on the land kind of lifestyle choice, only if you're, you know, kind of multi-millionaire to start with. So I might have to live in a tent, but yeah, it's definitely beyond my price range. But it matters not, because on closer inspection of my headline-grabbing notification, which made my heart sing, it turns out not to be the policy itself, but a different policy, which is voluntary repatriation for people who have arrived here irregularly. That has been in existence with Rwanda since 2022. This is not the same thing as the forced deportation of people. What this is another scheme, which is a voluntary scheme, and if you agree to be removed to Rwanda, the government has agreed to pay £3,000 as a sort of bye-bye thank you and pay your food and lodgings for 5 years. Now, before we all think, do you know what, actually, I think I might up stumps and move to Rwanda under that proposal myself, this is obviously only aimed at encouraging people who've arrived here illegally to leave of their own free will. So it's very expensive. I think, you know, this works out. Someone in the Labour Party, I don't know about costing, whether this is ridiculous or not, has worked out it's like £2 million a person. So not the cheapest of options, but not the same thing as what is proposed in the Rwanda bill. And therefore, we can still working and actually call me Kirsty Gannon. Lala Mouchard remains somewhere off. But hats off to the government for, you know, at least getting halfway out on something that everybody thinks is unworkable. And interesting now that they have got their dander up about this, whether in kind of taking this fight to Labour, we've seen a much more kind of punchy, Rishi unleashed, if you like, over the last couple of weeks, whether they'll actually try and pin Labour to the idea that actually Labour won't ditch its Rwanda policy, at least not immediately.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see whether Labour says that, because previously they've said no, we'll get rid of it, but they seem to be equivocating slightly. Okay. Interesting.
Okay, so Kirsty Buchanan it is for now. That's fine.
But now, I will own up to the fact I'm a little bit more nervous than I was about that.
Right, okay. Interestingly, so all of what you say is exactly right. You know, the voluntary scheme, the £3,000 for relocation. The other thing from the Labour Party that I picked up on, they said ministers were desperate to get a flight off to Rwanda before Thursday's local elections in England. Now, that strikes me as, well, yeah, sure, stating the obvious. Of course they are. It doesn't strike me as a particularly great criticism, because this has always been framed, discussed, talked about as an election issue. Now, albeit these are local elections and not the general election, but I just thought that was a strange thing for Labour to say, because it's kind of like, well, hang on, and what's your point?
Yeah, but, you know, as the tack lines go, it's pretty thin gruel, isn't it? I would have gone on the money of it, you know.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you've managed to send an entire human being to Rwanda at a cost to the taxpayer of £2 million. That's what I would have gone on as a tack line, but that's just me. But, you know, mainly they were perhaps slightly caught on the hop that something sort of kind of works from this government. But yes, of course, the government's going to announce it before the local elections.
Yeah, exactly.
We want Rishi to be a better politician and behave with someone with real political instinct. And then when he does that, he gets criticised. But welcome to the world if you can't win in politics, right?
Yeah, well, indeed. And then the other thing I just wanted to ask you about was Kemi Badenoch, who's been on the media round this morning discussing this, among many other things. But she was making the point that the fact that somebody volunteered to go to Rwanda undermines the argument that it's not a safe country, which has been the sort of rumbling back and forth on Rwanda for months, and indeed required government legislation to declare it a safe country. Has Kemi picked a hit on something here, that £3,000 paid for relocation, in inverted commas, perks, but some expenses paid when you arrive, somebody volunteering for that, does it undermine the argument that it's not a safe country?
Not hugely. I mean, it might be a perfectly safe country for this chap, which is why he's volunteered to go.
Yeah.
That and the financial incentive, of course. But the reality is the criticism about Rwanda being chosen as a safe country for third country deportations is because the government has declared it so. And what a lot of the criticism was that they wanted independent assessment of whether indeed that was the case or not. And this isn't, you know, obviously I heard Kemi this morning in typical feisty Kemi form, saying, oh, you know, this is suggesting that it's somehow racist to suggest that Rwanda is not a safe country. That's not the point of it. This is kind of a legal nicety, if you like, that you can't just as a government go, right, we've declared it to be safe and not expect challenge from the courts on it. Because that's how the kind of interplay between the judiciary and the executive does and should, frankly, work. So, no, I don't think that's the strongest kind of defence line either. Interestingly, though, this entire one man on a plane, and when we are talking about politics and good communications, I might have paced these out, and if I could, have flagged man on plane yesterday and left the much more positive news, if you like, around tackling immigration for that kind of wing of the Conservative Party and voters that care about that, is the significant fall in legal migration that we've seen off the back of those much tighter curbs on student visas. And they've fallen by 80% applications. because they were far too widely cast. You could bring, you know, your entire family and your family's family and what have you, etc. But they've had a lot of curbs on that, and that's had a huge impact on legal migration. And so actually, you know, we've always had this argument where, you know, the entire debate around migration is dominated around, you know, one boat is too many because of the dangers that it puts people in, but tens of thousands of illegal crossings on the channel compared with hundreds of thousands of people coming through perfectly legal routes, which put, you know, if this is your argument and this is your concern, puts exactly the same strain on public services, et cetera, as anybody else does that comes to the country or gets born in the country, et cetera. So actually, they've had a really good success in terms of bringing down those numbers. And we all are old enough to remember that the Conservative government once promised to bring net migration down to under 100,000, and it's something now like 700,000 last year, record high. So that's a huge win for them, but it's all been slightly overshadowed by us having a backwards and forwards about one man on the plane.
Well, yeah, that's it. Matt Charlie on Times Radio describes him as having a £3,000 cheque hanging out of his back pocket as he touched down in Rwanda. So there we are. But I suppose, you know, there is the timing thing. The PM will be promoting this lot as a win after all of these, you know, ages, years probably, actually, of delays as well. And I wonder, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday morning, so I think it's worth listening out to PMQs whether there will be some sort of Keir Starmer consideration around Rwanda, and indeed some challenge from Rishi Sunak back to Keir Starmer to say, you know, what will you do? Or what is your take on this? Sorry, not what will you do if you become Prime Minister? That'd be a bit of an open goal. But sort of challenging Starmer on his position on all of this. Because, yeah, Labour have said previously they would scrap the Rwanda deportation plan as we know it. But actually, it's a good point, Kirsty. I'm not sure I've ever asked the question of Labour about the voluntary scheme.
Yeah, it is an interesting point. You know, how much of what they attack about the current immigration policies do they actually plan to row back on? And I could bet that quite a lot of it will be still in situ, regardless. This is turning into, Labour's turning into a kind of, quite a sort of cut and paste government in waiting. You know, a lot of what it spends a lot of its time attacking the Conservatives off, actually, if you push them on it, their plans are, you know, nigh on identical, if not actually identical. And it's more about what people are voting against rather than what people are voting for. You know, I think it's driven by that. But having said all that, I have to say, you know, we talked about this last week and this kind of change in Rishi Sunak's mindset. Overall, I think he's had a really good couple of weeks. I know there was a Dan Poulter defection, but that didn't resonate quite in the way that you would have expected it to, right? It was a kind of one news cycle story, but it didn't fall into a much wider story. And actually, you know, I've always said about Rishi Sunak is a kind of one step forward, two steps back prime minister. He has a good wake and then, you know, three things will come and smack him down again. Actually, I think overall he's had two really good solid weeks. Now, whether any of that translates into anything in terms of narrowing the polls, I think you need, you know, two good weeks stuff, not a narrowing of the polls make, as Shakespeare once said. You know, but it is two of the most solid weeks I've seen since he gained office. So it's interesting, and I think, you know, if I was a Conservative, and yes, of course, it's a lot of this is about staving off what might happen after the local elections, of which more in a minute. But if I was a kind of Conservative voter, I'd be looking at the last couple of weeks and going, yes, more of this, please.
Yeah. Yeah, more on the local elections then in a mo. But we want to do a couple of minutes of catching up on events in Scottish politics as well. We're kind of in a bit of a holding pattern, I think it's worth saying, since Hamza Yousaf announced his resignation as SNP leader and that he will stand down as First Minister just as soon as a successor is in place. Just as a template for that, think back to, oh gosh, a year ago when Nicola Sturgeon basically did the same thing. And that triggered the leadership contest in which Hamza Yousaf beat Kate Forbes. She was in second place and Ash Regan came third. I suppose it is the holding pattern. We're waiting for announcements, Kirsty. The key thing here is whether Kate Forbes decides to run again or whether John Swinney, definitely part of the SNP establishment for decades, whether he can go unchallenged in this leadership contest as well.
And a couple of questions here. Now I'm going to, you know, try and push you into a position on this. One, do you think Kate Forbes will fold? And two, is it broadly right, what I read in the papers, that you know, Swinney is obviously SNP establishment, but Kate Forbes is actually more popular with the public, or is that spin? In other words, what are you electing someone for? To hold the SNP party together, or, you know, to appeal to voters? Is that a fair kind of, if somewhat crude, delineation between them?
Yes, so it's a good point. And actually, helpfully, there's some brand new polling from Ipsos doing the rounds in the last sort of 12 hours or so, that since Hamza Yusuf's resignation, SNP voters are more likely to favour John Swinney to Kate Forbes, 30% to 21%, but the general public prefer Kate Forbes, albeit not by a huge amount, but it is 26% to 20%. And so I think your last question there on that sort of spin, actually it is founded in data. And by the way, this is exactly what happened last time out as well, that the SNP members and parliamentarians indeed all came out to support Hamza Yusuf. But throughout the leadership, from the word go and throughout the leadership contest last time, Kate Forbes was out in front with the Scottish public. And so the argument from her camp and from her was, look, the Scottish public are looking for me to do it. You know, it's for Kate Forbes to be First Minister of the entire country. Now, that is despite the absolute torrents of abuse, critique, criticism that she faced because of her Christian faith and the views that she holds as a result of that. But the same thing is happening again here. And so I wonder, and Politico was reporting this morning, the Scottish papers have been kind of musing on this as well, whether there is something to be said for a John Swinney first ministership with a Kate Forbes in a really high profile place in the cabinet with a lot of responsibility, to demonstrate to the party and the public that the SNP is listening and that the Scottish government can be representative. And actually, my other consideration on all of this is that the next Scottish parliamentary election is due in 2026. It will be in May 2026, as per the rules of the Scotland Act. And so with that in mind, does John Swinney, who, by the way, a couple of years ago quite vehemently announced his departure from frontline politics, if he becomes First Minister, does he only do it till 2026? I think, though, Kirsty, I'm interested in your take on the comms on that, because he couldn't say that, presumably, right now, because it would make him a lame duck from the word go. But I do just wonder if that's the kind of idea here. Get to 2026, see what happens. Sidebar, the polls suggest that the SNP might drop a bit. There's obviously time before the Scottish parliamentary elections. But I just wonder if that's part of this as well, is if John Swinney becomes First Minister, realistically, how long can that be for?
Yeah, it's a very good point, isn't it? And you're right, from a comms point of view, if he came out and said, look, basically I'm going to do this till 2026, the water would, you know, metaphorically close over his head in situ, if you like, and everyone would move on to the leadership contest almost from day one. So that would hobble him from the get-go. I think there's an interesting point around the handover, whether it's explicit or implicit. If he gave Kate Forbes a job that amounted to deputy first minister, is that in essence anointing her anyway, which might have the same kind of effect of the, you know, water moving over his head? And regardless of whether she does or doesn't, you know, fight against him and there is or isn't an election, it doesn't change the maths either, does it? Because they are still, whilst it holds the party together, they are still then a minority administration. That's correct, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So in essence, you know, unless you can get another confidence and supply, and I don't see where that's coming from, good luck, you know, holding that together till 2026 would be my view on it. So they're by no means, I mean, you know, at the moment, obviously all the focus is on, you know, is this a coronation or will this be a contest? Fine. But regardless of the outcome of that, and even regardless of whether it's Swinney or Forbes, it doesn't change the fundamental mathematics. And politics is mostly about people, but sometimes it's just about math.
Yeah, that's true. Put that on a t-shirt. That's great. I'm just going to pick up on, just very briefly, on one thing you said there about if Swinney makes Forbes deputy first minister, for example, Which is, you know, some of the speculation in the papers this morning. Does that anoint her? I think that's that would be a really notable return to form in some ways for the SNP, because one of the great criticisms, and arguably one of the most obvious criticisms of the fact they're looking to Swinney right now, is because they have not done any succession planning. And there was an argument about that when Sturgeon stood down. Sturgeon was such an obvious successor to Salmond. She had always been kind of in the mix. You know, she was Deputy First Minister, she was Health Secretary, etc. She was always really high profile. And so the succession, she stood unchallenged when Salmond resigned. It was Sturgeon that took over. That was it, uncontested, no problem. And so that was a really interesting part of the SNP's structure and makeup, is that previously they've considered that succession planning, and over the last couple of years they have not. So I wonder if Swinney tries to line that up, albeit perhaps implicitly and without expressing it out loud, but I wonder if that could be something that emerges from this leadership contest as well.
But that only works if Forbes is as popular, in, you know, in inverted commas, with the public as her supporters claim, right?
Yeah, and that's a
margin of error calculation, that the difference between her and Swinney. And it doesn't change the fundamentals of the fact that, you know, if she's trying to lead a party which is full of members who are, you know, quote-unquote, more progressive in terms of their social views than she is, it doesn't get them out of the woods from that point of view either, does it?
Not really. It is really fascinating. For more, you can listen to our sister podcast, by the way, Holyrood Sources. Just have a little search, have a listen, and you can get stuck into Scottish politics.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, hello. Well, you thought you'd got rid of me, didn't you? Well, here I am in the break as well. You are welcome. Here at Whitehall Sources, we are always enthusiastic about rigorous journalism. So we have been tapping up our very special sources to find out more about The Resident, which says it has excellent rooms in exceptional locations, providing heartfelt hospitality. I'm pleased to say their story checks out, actually. Here's one of our sources, Bossman56, who says, just spent 3 days at the Resident Covent Garden. Room was excellent, so were the staff. The room and the hotel, clean and tidy. Staff were friendly and very efficient. Will be going back soon. And in the interest of double sourcing, it's just what we have to do as rigorous journalists. How about this from Gufton, which I assume must be a code name. The best hotel I've stayed at in London. The customer service was unsurpassed from the moment I walked in the door. It actually all makes us very proud to be supported by The Resident on Whitehall Sources. And you can join The Resident online. Go to residenthotels.com. And if you all do that, they'll actually just be very pleased with us. So go to residenthotels.com. Thank you. Right, Kirsty, let's come to the main focus, really, of our episode this week on Whitehall Sources, which is to consider the local elections. Tomorrow, Thursday, the 2nd of May, is local election day in England and Wales, and it's not all councils, of course, but, we need to discuss bin collections, potholes, local schools, town centres, This set of local elections is, in Beth Rigby from Sky News' words, hugely significant. It's the final big ballot test that we're going to get before a general election. She notes that some 28 million people across England and Wales have the option of casting a vote. This is, of course, for councillors, mayors, London Assembly members, police and crime commissioners, brackets, what do they even do? And Labour is kind of using this as a bit of a dry run for the general election, says Beth Rigby, to test arguments, to kind of focus on local battlegrounds where they need a victory now to propel them, to give them the momentum into the general election. And is that actually what these are all about, Kirsty? It's not so much about saying, you know, Labour pick up 50 councillors in this part of England and therefore they will have an MP, because the extrapolation's difficult. But is it actually about that feeling of momentum and the parties establishing themselves on the ground on an election footing?
Well, look, it's what it should be about. But as ever, you know, the Conservative, you know, malcontent alliance on the back benches have made it all about them again. I mean, you know, Humza Yousaf is the king of all, like, shooting yourself in the political foot until the Tory rebels came along and said, hold my beer, right, as a local election. So, you know, the only thing that, you know, at the moment going into the elections, the media would mainly be focusing on is the impact these elections have on Rishi Sunak's standing and whether that triggers a vote of no confidence in him next week from assorted, you know, malcontents and, you know, unhappy bunnies on the back bench. So can we just, if I just bore people rigid with some of the kind of background on this first, it's important to get a sense of what the scale of this is and where to look and where not to look. So broadly speaking, there are 2,636 seats up, right, across, these are all England councils, they're mainly unitaries, there's some districts, etc. But it's only England, there's no elections in Scotland or Wales. And roughly speaking, Labour is defending about 1,000 seats, and roughly speaking, the Conservatives are defending about 1,000 seats too, just shy of 1,000 seats. Now, again, with, you know, Rishi Sunak being a Prime Minister that just doesn't get any luck, the comparable set of elections for these are those from 2021, which was a high watermark for the Conservative Party because, you know, we just developed a vaccine and they were almost full of the joys of freedom looming for them. So what does that look like in terms of where people should look and what does good and what's bad look like? So independently kind of assessed by political gurus Thrasher and Rawlings, if Conservatives lost about 500 plus seats, that'd be a bad night for them overall. That hasn't been hugely contested by the Conservative Party, nor have they tried to manage expectations by going, actually, those 700 seats would be a bad. So we'll park 500 as being the kind of generally agreed touchstone on that. There's no point really looking at how many councils the Conservatives lose to Labour or no overall control, because of all of these councils that are up, there's about 107 councils that are up in some form or another. Labour and Conservatives only control 18 of them anyway. So not much point looking at that. So where most of the attention is focused is A, on whether that 500 plus seat loss for Conservatives and these 10 mayoral contests. Interesting point about PCCs, police and crime commissioners are up too. One of the first things I would do if I was a Labour government would be to abolish them. As brilliant as combined authorities and metro mayors have been for devolution, PCCs have been a complete kind of waste of time and democratic effort as far as I can see. Anyway, they're up too, but we'll park those because if anybody can name their PCC, they'll get a sticker from me. I can name mine. So 10 mayoral contests, some are new, some are more important than others, some are absolutely baked in for Labour anyway. So we'll come back to those in a minute. And then slightly underbaked for me is the Blackpool South by-election, which was prompted by Scott Benton having to resign over a lobbying scandal. So that is almost, because that's, I mean, obviously that's baked in now to go to Labour. But actually, you know, depending on how badly Labour do there, Conservatives do there, one of the few touch points, if you like, from this night that you can generally say has a potential read across would be that Blackpool South by-election. But everyone seems to have forgotten about that. Mm-hmm. Timing-wise, just very quickly, my advice would be, you know, even if you're a massive nerd, if you don't have to stay up, don't. Because overnight, of those 107 councillors, only about 35 are going to return. You know, half again will return by kind of lunchtime on Friday. There'll be four mayoral results lunchtime on Friday and all the PCCs. The one to watch on Friday lunchtime is Teesside, which we'll come back to in a minute, and York and North Yorkshire, which is a new Metro Mayor seat. Now, originally, this is North Yorkshire is Rishi Sunak's turf, if you like. His constituency is Richmond in North Yorkshire. Originally, that should have been a shoe-in for the Conservatives. It's 50-50, I hear now. And then Saturday, we've got six more mayoral results coming in. A lot of those are absolutely baked in for Labour. Liverpool, Manchester, London, West Yorkshire. There's a new one, South Yorkshire, and West Midlands. So of all of that big melange, the short form version is the things that in expectation management, people for various different reasons have focused in on is two mayoral contests. Right? So that's Teesside and the West Midlands. Now, the only other thing to really look at that you can kind of argue is a read across to a potential general election is the vote share. So once all those votes are in, you can come up with something called NEV, which is a national equivalent vote share. Now, in the election last year, local elections last year, Labour got about 36, Tories got about 30. I think everyone would be looking at their NEV2 to try and get a read across. But here is the interesting thing that's happened with Teesside and West Midlands. So Teesside is being defended by an incumbent Conservative mayor called Ben Houchen. West Midlands Combined Authority is being defended by a Conservative mayor called Andy Street. Both of them are very high profile. Neither of them have campaigned now or at any point in an access of Rishi Sunak. They've not used him as a kind of, you know, electoral benefit. They campaign in their own right. And so actually what we've seen from an expectation management point of view is, first of all, the Conservatives saying what really matters are these two mayoral contests. You know, if these win, they show that, you know, delivery matters and Rishi's still in with a shout at the general election, right? If we can unite, take the fight. So that was the start of that. Then we saw Labour saying, actually, the Teesside's all but won by Houchen, so we're going to concentrate all our firepower on the West Midlands. Right? This is not true, by the way, but what I think they were trying to do was create an element of surprise. Because if you bake in that Conservatives will hold those seats, albeit maybe narrowly, and you take away the shock value of one of them falling. So I think they were trying to create shock value. Now we see a third iteration of how to read those two crucial mayoral elections, is that they hold on to them. It's because neither Street nor Houchen have anything to do with Rishi Sunak. So in other words, you know, both Labour and the malcontent Conservative rebels are arguing now, before they started with an argument about if they lose, it's because of Rishi. And now they're arguing if they win, it's in spite of Rishi, not because of. So ultimately, you know, again, you know, if you're the Prime Minister, you can't win. And here is the thing. So the reason that these two matter is because they've been used as a touchstone for whether Rishi Sunak will face a vote of no confidence next week. I've been doing this a very long time. If I had a pound for every time, and they said, you know, local elections, flashpoint, you know, lead challenge for the Prime Minister, et cetera, et cetera, I'd be able to take you and me out for a pretty decent slap-up lunch, right? And the main reason is because it's really hard to read across local elections, even mayoral ones, right? It's really hard. It's not binary in a way that general elections are. People aren't always voting on, I don't like the government, so I'm going to give them a shoeing in the local elections. They are, by and large, voting on, you know, potholes and bin collections and things that matter to them. And there's such a multiplicity of players in it that it's just, you know, and such a geographical spread that it's just very hard to create any real sense of read across. Added to which, of course, those backbenchers will come under enormous pressure from, you know, Conservative grandees not to, you know, shoot the party in the foot yet again and use it as an excuse to trigger a vote of no confidence in Rishi. And so obviously if he survives next week, and, you know, the Sunday papers will be fascinating in this, whether there's a sense of momentum after those, you know, night and 2 days of what will undoubtedly be very, very bad read across for the Conservatives, whether that then creates a sense of momentum into the Sunday papers that, you know, a plot is coming, etc., or whether, you know, the party, Conservative associations, political grandees have put pressure on the rebels and said, you know, you are doing nobody any favours here. All you're doing is settling scores, etc. So we will see. I mean, on balance, I would say it's sound and fury that ultimately will signify nothing. But we shall see. It's by no means certain. Like I say, never underestimate the ferret and the sats brigade to everything can fly in the face of common sense.
Just to say then that in the race to be mayor of Tees Valley, these are the candidates: Ben Houchen from the Conservative and Unionist Party, Chris McEwen from the Labour and Cooperative Party, and Simon Thorley for the Liberal Democrats. And in the West Midlands, the candidates are as follows: Siobhan Harper-Nunes, Green Party, Richard Parker from the Labour and Cooperative Party, Andy Street from the Conservative and Unionist Party, Sonny Virk from the Liberal Democrats, Elaine Ruth Williams from Reform UK, and Ahmed Yaqub, who is an independent candidate. Good. That feels pretty comprehensive. Is there anything else I need to ask you about local elections, other than to encourage people, by the way, to listen to Times Radio, because I'm part of the Bloomin' Overnight programme. Tomorrow night.
You better be the king of, like, spinning out saying nothing over and over again. What time are you on from?
We're on from 10 p.m. till 3 a.m. Myself and Matt, okay, Charlie and so, Kate McCann.
Right, so for 2 hours you will have zippo to talk about at all. Because I understand that the first results don't even return to me. So good luck with that. I mean, fortunately, you know, Kate and Matt are fantastic company, yeah. So you'll have a good old chat. But he won't be reading the rooms of the results coming in, so... I don't envy you that one, because I have to say...
Oh, Kirsty, don't say that. Oh, God. Do you know what I'm doing as well? I'm doing results night 10 till 3, then I'm going to the hotel across the road to sleep for probably about... Well, I say sleep, to lie down in a dark room for probably about an hour, then I'm getting up to do breakfast with Chloe from 6 a.m.
Wow. I really don't envy you.
You watch, you're going to get a phone call. I'm going to make sure the producers phone you at some point. You're going to get dragged into this thing as well.
Yeah, but I'll have gone to bed at 10, right? Woken up at 5 to see what the results are like. That's fine. I don't mind about that. Well, and shall I give our listeners a little insider gossip? So I bumped just before I came on the call to you.
Oh, yeah.
I bumped into a friend who is very thick with the Tory rebel group, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I asked her what the mood was like, because she was out with about 10 of them last night. And she said to me, not one of them are that convinced about going for Rishi next week. So it might all just fizzle out, much to the probably disappointment of some journalists who these days must be jonesing for, like, dramatic political events on a kind of weekly basis, because they got so used to them over the last few years. But I was interested by what she said, because she's very well connected to that crowd, and she said that certainly the people she was with 10 of them last night, and she just had no appetite for it at all.
Wow, that is absolutely fascinating. And if it's any help for them, for Rishi Sunak, today is the day that I'm in the clear for my holiday to Italy at the start of June, in order that general election day, and therefore results day, will not fall during that holiday. However, we still might be at risk if he goes for it. And there's a campaign running while I'm lying in a vineyard in Tuscany. So yeah, we're kind of just keeping it. We've got election watch dates in the calendar for crucial moments that can pass, so that we're totally in the clear. So today marks a good time that we won't be away when election day itself takes place. So we're thankful for that, at least. Right. I think that's everything for today, Kirsty. Thank you very much. Thanks for being on the pod.
You're most welcome.
You carry on as Kirsty Buchanan for the time being. Thank you so much for listening. We will drop into your feed again as and when local election results become a bit clearer and when we know what we can read into them, basically, in the coming days. So make sure you follow and subscribe and stick around. We take you inside Westminster politics. This is Whitehall Sources. If you have any questions anytime or anything that you'd like to add to the conversation, you can email hello@whitehallsources.com, and we will speak to you at some point in the next few days after the local elections.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.